From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
The edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. We are back in studio today after stepping out yesterday as I spoke with Michael Thompson, the head of Ole Miss's Marketing Communications Department, almost an hour and a half yesterday. Got put up a little late. It's about 12:30 when it went live, so you guys that listen around lunch may not have heard it. So go back, check that out. A lot on the NCAA response that Ole Miss had, marketing, fan engagement, branding, even talk mascots, talk colors in the stadium. We covered a lot of ground over the course of an hour and a half with Michael yesterday, so appreciate him joining us for that. Today, one of your favorites on the show, Mr. J.G. Tate, the publisher at AuburnSports.com. Last night, Ole Miss had a 10-point lead at halftime at Auburn Arena before losing by 15, really, really struggling in the second half. At one point, I think Auburn outscored the Rebels by 21 points over a 13-minute span before winning 85-70. So we'll talk to Jay about some different things today on the show that is always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. You can find the lunch specials, you can find the rib plates, and much more there at the Oxford Exxon. All home games at the Pavilion. They tell you about the bottomless refills that they have available and more. So check them out on Highway 6 West, again, in Oxford. And also we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. You call the number. You ask for Corey Clark, and Corey gives you a quote on the new Ford you're looking for. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. We tell you this all the time. It's true. You get your quote. You can shop it around if you'd like. That's cool. It's your business. It's your time. You're going to end up coming back to Corey and taking that deal and joining the long list of podcast listeners who have let Corey and the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the car buying experience. We're going to make it even better. Make sure that you do this, because if you don't, it's really sort of stupid. At the end of your deal, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our family of podcasts. $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
Also, a quick mention here. We'll cover this in the coming days. February 3rd in Macomb, Jamie Lynn Spears is performing. Kind of it's called, I think, Hometown Sessions, Blue Sky Critical. One of the presenting main sponsors for that event is Jamie Lynn will go there in Macomb. You can get tickets at eventbrite.com, and I'll put some links up in some different places as that moves forward. But again, February 3rd, a few weeks away, but we'll mention it more on the podcast as we go. Neil, DeAndre Burnett out with the flu last night. Ole Miss still played a really, really successful first half, and then Auburn got hot. Things kind of turned, and when it did, that was it really fast.
They melted down in the second half. They hung in there in the first half. Auburn missed shots.
Yeah, built a lead.
Built a lead. Made a big bucket to end the half. Stevens hit a three. Took a 10-point lead and some momentum into the half. Stevens picks up two quick fouls, and they went ice cold. I don't have the exact percentages in front of me. It was like 16% from three, 50-something from the line, I think 26% from the floor. This is not meant to be snarky. No one wins like that. The fact that they played so well in the first half shows you just how bad the second half was. When you lose the second half by 25 points, you got your ass kicked. And Auburn's good, and it's on the road, and they have a great environment. They've had a pretty good environment the last few years with bad teams. It's a really good environment with a good team. Not having DeAndre Burnett hurt, that wasn't the reason that they lost the game.
Ole Miss finishes this week with Florida at home on Saturday at 12 o'clock noon on CBS, if you're not local. And then a couple road trips in a row, A&M and then Arkansas, an A&M team that might be 0-5 by that point in the league. They lose to Kentucky by 1 point last night. They play Tennessee Saturday in Knoxville.
Yeah, and they're weird. I watched a lot of that Kentucky A&M game last night. I thought the whole game, A&M was going to win it. and then they didn't. Kentucky's not what Kentucky's been in the past.
No. Now, they're they are solid. About to get the Vanderbilt kid back.
Yeah, they're solid.
Yeah. Point being, incredibly pivotal here. A couple things, though. Auburn, a top 25 team that's won a lot of games in a row. And this is without Wiley, without the other kid. I mean, who knows what they'd be without some of the FBI stuff going on. But anyway, good team on the road. Not a game that even going into it you thought, well, this is one Ole Miss really has to have. I mean, that was a free shot last night. In saying that, though, you build up the lead. You get the lead. At some point, you've got to steal one to make this season. I'm not talking tournament. I'm talking just kind of satisfactory to watch from a fan standpoint in a lot of ways. So my question here is, I know that the circumstances around the loss last night plays a large role in the microcosm of this one game, but what is it indicative of right now that there's just such major teeth gnashing over every single game? It's not the marathon that baseball is, but it's fairly close.
Yeah, it's close. Look, if they had won those three home games,
South Dakota State, Virginia Tech, and somebody else.
Illinois State.
Yeah.
Even if they just won two of those three games. Let's say, for the sake of my argument, they had won all three. Last night, no one's even saying anything.
They blew the lead.
Last night, everyone would be saying, well, you know, played pretty well in the first half, really missed DeAndre, blah, blah, blah. For whatever reason or reasons, I don't know, you asked about the mood of the fan base. So I'll go there. I don't know. The basketball thing is a nuanced, complicated topic here. You're putting the results from the survey that you put up the other day. I'm not breaking news here or ruining your story to tell you that basketball finished a distant fourth among our readership as it pertains to what they are interested in.
Yeah, to them, most important topics, essentially.
Gonna get Jay around 9, just so you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
People want to like basketball. I go back to there's a night last year that really sticks out to me, and this isn't fair. It just is what it is. People got excited last year. They went up and they beat like Monmouth or somebody in the first round. And then they went to Syracuse on that Saturday. It was an 11 a.m. game.
Snow everywhere.
Yeah, and they won. Played their butts off and won up there. And people got excited. And they got Georgia Tech at home for an NIT quarterfinal.
To get to New York.
And it was kind of one of the first nights that the new building had a buzz, a big game buzz to it. And they just didn't play well. And they lost, and it was a missed opportunity because obviously the season ended, and that's it. You know, you fold up shut up the lockers, and that's it. It was kind of an opportunity to get a buzz, and they didn't do it. And then you had all the stuff in the offseason that has led to polarized camps. You have the very pro-AK camp that, by God, that's the reason they suck. And then you have the very anti-AK camp with, see, they were right. And the truth, again, is this nuanced middle ground of anyone that defends that process, you're blindly defending it. There is some, and then the people who say, well, if that had not happened, they'd probably have Pickett here. And Pickett would have perhaps made a difference in those overtime games. He's getting 6-4 at Georgetown. He'd be getting 6-4 at Ole Miss, and they could use that presence. Okay, it's kind of true, kind of not, kind of a stretch. There's just this middle ground. And Andy's been here for 12 years, and there's people that are obviously emotional on both sides of it. And I'll say what I've said all along about Kennedy, and this always gets construed as this is defense of him, and it's not meant to be. It's not my job to defend or not defend the head coach. I'm a beat writer. It's my job to cover, in my opinion. Some of you might disagree, but that's what I think. Can you get a? Are there better coaches in college basketball than Andy Kennedy? Yes. Andy would tell you that. Can you do better here? I don't know. Probably, maybe, perhaps. Can you do worse? Oh, God, yes. And so when people say to me, do you think he's gone? I'm like, I don't know. Do you think he should be gone? My question, and it gets people riled up, is who are you going to hire? And that's not me saying no one will take the job. I'm not saying that. I'm asking a question literally. Who are you going to hire? Because you can screw this up. Andy's teams never suck. There were teams here before Andy that sucked. Yeah, Rod Barnes had a couple of good teams. Rod Barnes had three or four teams, as if I recall correctly, that were abominations.
The last four. Yeah, when it fell off, it really fell off.
So, I mean, why are people emotional about it? I don't know. People are emotional about these games. I told you, I wrote this the other day. People at 1-1, at one loss, after the Georgia loss, I got emails from people going, when are you going to call for his head? I'm like, really?
By the way, just for complete accuracy, Jamarco Pickett is averaging 25 minutes a game for Georgetown.
Okay.
And he is scoring 8.1 points per game and getting 2.8 boards per game.
So 8-3. I mean, 8-3 would make a difference here. 8-3 would make a difference here. It was a bad move on the part of the Chancellor. It was a move that, frankly, is not defensible. And there are people that say, well, all Andy had to do was Andy could have kept it quiet. They would have rolled over the contract and not changed the buyout. Well, that would have been dumb on his part. And Andy's not dumb. There's a lot of things you can accuse him of. Being dumb is not one of them. He's typically the sharpest tack in the room. The truth is, and I believe this is Vitter. I don't believe it was Bjork. I believe Bjork, had it been Bjork's decision, Bjork would have rolled over the contract and rolled over the buyout. That's what I believe. The truth is, if the Chancellor had lost confidence in Andy Kennedy at the end of last season, he should have made a move then. It's his prerogative. You can fire coaches.
Yeah, Hugh was rolled and Mike was rolled.
Yes, they should have rolled Andy Kennedy or fired him, one or the other. Doing what they did was a failure. It created this environment of tournament or bust. And maybe it was going to be tournament or bust anyway, but that's typically not a great idea to announce that publicly.
And polarizing is the word because...
I'll give you an example real quick, real fast. Texas A&M football. The AD made that season even more dramatic than it had to be by basically saying, hey, this is it.
All the stuff that you talk about, the decade-long teeth-gnashing of what Ole Miss basketball should or should not be and the close calls and everything, it's created an environment where there's no nuance whatsoever. I mean, I noticed this. You and I were discussing this last night. Even from I get that this as a medium is lack of nuance, but on social media last night, Twitter, you either 100% love AK and you can't criticize him, or you hate him and you can't acknowledge anything. It's 0 or 100. There's nothing in the middle to go, well, there's a lot here. No. It's are you in or are you out? And that is the end of it. So it's fascinating to me.
It's the Houston Nutt deal. In or out?
You're the circle of untrustables or whatever it is, or you're in the middle of the circle.
And then the truth is...
I think the picture that always gets to use, I think it's like poor like Brandon Bolden and E.J. Epperson or somebody. They're always stuck out there on the edge because of the one day.
Brandon Bolden.
Yeah.
Because one day somebody didn't do something. Crazy. Land of the untrustables.
Yeah, might have been Corvick Need. I don't know. It was one of them.
It was Corvick Need. It was Corvick and Brandon. Two of the nicest kids you'll ever cover. I mean, there were kids on that team that, frankly, belonged in the land of the untrustables. Brandon and Corvick were never those people, and their names are stuck out there on the side because of some deal that happened one day in the summer.
Yeah. Some dude picked 1 July 8th to take a photo, and that was it, dudes.
Brandon Bolden and Corey McNeet, two of the nicest kids. Oh my God, that whole circus. But this deal, look, you can, I love Andy. I'll be honest, I've done sports writing for a long damn time. I've covered a lot of people. There's never been a person, this is from a journalist. This is not an emotional fan, and I'm not criticizing the emotional fan. Fans short for fanatic. Fans are emotional. That's fine. I view this from a professional standpoint. There's no one that I've ever covered. It's probably very similar to the way you feel about Mike in many ways. There's no one I've ever covered who's just more pleasurable to cover. Andy is a phenomenal quote. He doesn't get whiny. He's not big on grudges. He answers your questions. And if you ask an intelligent question, you get a phenomenal answer. If you ask an average question, you get almost a phenomenal answer. And if you ask a bad question, you still get a good answer. For what we do for a living, that's pretty good. If you ask a question about an injury, he will tell you what is going on with the player. There's not a lot of this crap that we deal
honest,
with.
Honest, fair, and accessible. Okay.
Honest, fair, accessible, and a phenomenal quote. For what we do, that's really good. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've transcribed the 5-minute interview with Andy Kennedy and went, well, there's my column.
And now, look, that's gained him media favor over the years.
There's absolutely.
No, but he's winning now, but Bruce Pearl, same thing. Bruce Pearl got 1,000 foot of rope because of the way he was able to get the public and the media on his side.
Absolutely.
And on the reverse side, you have coaches that are abrasive and asses at Orgeron.
And the media
has no rope.
And the media will give them no rope at all. Zero. Yeah. I didn't.
And that dictates terms with the fan base.
I mean, Houston Nutt was a jerk to me. So when it came down to nut cutting time, frankly, I mean, was I going to defend him? Hell no. I'm human.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It just is what it is. So with Kennedy, I don't know. But the fans it's an emotional thing. And it's this, as we go forward in this, Saturday becomes a really big game. Florida comes to town. There's going to be all the Mike White stuff. It's everyone. The only thing I will say, and Andy said this the other day, to his credit, to his everlasting credit, he never makes excuses, and he always says you are what your numbers say you are. You're not better than that or worse than that. You're what the numbers say you are. It's kind of the equivalent of if someone pays you $5 million a year and someone goes, well, you're not worth $5 million. All it takes is one person to say that I am. But their numbers say what they are, but there aren't many free shots. Because of the losses, you have to go get wins. Yes, there are lots of opportunities, and in a vacuum, a loss at Auburn doesn't hurt you at all. But you got to go get wins.
And again, I'm not even talking about tournament. I'm just talking about just a season that's kind of okay.
Okay, you're more – let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because you're more in touch with the fan base than I am, in large part just because of where you're from.
Okay.
And you know more people, that kind of thing, and you're a friendlier person than I am. Do you sense that among fans – and I know fans won't make this decision, sort of. Do you sense that it's tournament or bust, or do you think there is a middle ground somewhere?
I think there's a small middle ground, but it certainly lingers more toward tournament, closer to that realm. I don't think, even with my buddies, the fans that aren't overly emotional, the crazy ones, I still think, yeah, they go, hey, we love I hear this all the time. I love Andy. It just feels like Tom. That's what I hear all the time. I mean, you know, it's like we talked about this so much. Jeffrey's on this all the time when he's on the podcast. There gets to be a certain year where a stillness comes into a program, no matter what really is going on, unless you're Nick Saban and you're winning national titles. I mean, anything shy of that, and it's just kind of as soon as the shoe starts to drop, it drops huge because of the length of tenure. And I think with the average fans, they love Andy. They want Andy to succeed. It's almost like they'd be willing. And now look, once it gets into it and you start experiencing this, I don't know if it'd be the case or not, but at least in their minds right now, to me, the average fan would be much happier with more volatility, More tournaments, more sucking. More tournaments, more sucking. Bigger highs, bigger lows.
Georgia baseball.
It's exactly what I was getting to. Yeah, I mean, Dave Perno gets run out after three Omahas in 7 years, but it's because he missed Hoover 3 or 4 years right. in that span too. So, yeah, I think that's the kind of thing is they go, well, if you give me four tournaments in 10 years, I'll let you suck 3 or 4 times too. Now, look, they're in the sucking years, they'd be pissed off. But I think that in some ways, Andy's high level but not high enough level consistency is almost a detriment with some of the fan base.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's again, nuance, weird deal, but
no,
that's,
but it is a nuance deal. It's one of the great things about a podcast is you can get into some nuance. What will be interesting, and I don't have the schedule in front of me, maybe you do.
Past those five, yeah.
It's Florida at home. Then they go on the road for two next week.
At A&M, at Arkansas.
I'm curious to see what attendance is in the month of February at home.
They get back from that to play Alabama at home.
I'm curious to see what attendance is for games like an Alabama game. A weekend when, you know, it's cold outside. You got stuff going on. Hey, Dad, how are you? Would you like to say hello to the podcast people? No? Okay. Okay. All right. Love you. Where was I? Oh, crowds. Who shows?
Yeah.
Who shows? What's the numbers? Is it, what's the atmosphere? That's where, when I say fans, when I caught myself a minute ago and I said fans won't make the decision. Well, fans do sort of participate in the decisions. When I say fans won't make the decisions, ultimately Ross Bjork and Jeffrey Vitter are going to be the two people that make the decision. I will say what I always say about firing coaches. The moment you fire a coach, literally the very next second, it's not on him anymore. It's on you. And that's where the basketball thing here is weird. And you know this. High school basketball in Mississippi is not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great.
No, there's good pockets and good players, but Ole Miss has had no AAU presence with them.
Right. It's not the second most popular sport here like it is at most places. And this isn't an anti-baseball thing at all. I mean, Mike's done a phenomenal job. And the baseball atmosphere at Ole Miss is remarkable. It's very, very good. And it's fun. And it's winters are cold here, and it starts to warm up. And people go out, and they sit in the nice sun, and they watch a good baseball team play, and they get to have a couple of brews in the outfield. And
It's not the norm, but it's not unique either. LSU, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, no, there's
Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, college baseball's growing as a sport, but it's
I don't know them well enough. I might throw Arkansas in the mix.
My point is, Big Ten job or a Big 12 job, the second most popular sport on campus is basketball.
Yeah, 100% of the time.
And so it is a unique deal. And then there are some people in this here, I get it, it's around the SEC even. But there's a lot of this here. There's almost an aggressive dislike of basketball. That is, it's a difficult job. It's not an impossible job. You have great facilities and all that. You have no NBA presence. And someone could say, well, some of that's on Andy. Fair enough. There's no AAU connections that are real, real strong.
Got to get better at that. However it's got to happen, got to get better.
Because otherwise, we're going to be having the same conversation the time.
I don't know. I know nothing about basketball recruiting. Zero. I do, however, know that whatever the reason is, you've got to get better at that.
Yes. You've got to get better at that. So I don't know what the answer is. At some point, I don't even know what the question is. If it's tournament or bust, if that's where this season is.
Well, it's over.
It's over. Because this team to make a tournament has 14 games left, and it realistically has to go no worse than 10-4 and probably needs to go 11-3 and then has to make noise in St. Louis.
Yeah, and That is what it is.
I will say the one thing to anybody out there who's doing the they should make a change in the middle of the season thing, I'm going to tell you what. That would be the most disrespectful thing that anyone could do to a guy who's been nothing but respectful for a dozen years.
Podcast brought to you in part by Master Guts Lawn and Landscape. We'll service lawn maintenance landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. It's going to be warm before too terribly long, hopefully, as baseball season's about a month away. Time to get that outdoor living area, that outdoor kitchen, or just get your landscape options for the spring ready to go. And get a free quote from MasterCut, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Remember, when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is free.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, the technology and products you want, all with a personal touch. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees are nationwide. Are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay, mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out LiveOxford, bankoxford.com, or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. Be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab at the top left. Filter through by what you're looking for. There's a lot happening, as my street can attest. There's lots of new real estate going up just behind my neighborhood here, which is good and bad. But you can learn all about that at harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, all the new 2018s are at Grenada Nissan. Also, great deals on previously owned Nissans, leased Nissans as well. Great lease deals. Check all of that out at GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
Couple different just news and notes going on right now. By the way, Michael Thompson talked a good bit about Year of the Fan on the podcast yesterday, so you can go back, listen to that, and hear a little more on that topic. Story up this morning, Ole Miss nearing its renovation completion for Swayze Field, Oxford University Stadium. That's a $20 million project. It's been going on for a while, and it'll mostly be completed by opening day, February 16th, when Ole Miss faces Winthrop at Swayze Field. All the field club level stuff will be done. The box seats will be finished. Most of the fan things, except for the plaza that they're putting down the right field line, will be completed. Ole Miss will stay in its third base dugout until the clubhouse is completely done. So sometime midseason, Ole Miss will switch to the first base dugout, but they'll at least begin in the third base. Mostly player amenities. I think the entire project is 42,000 square feet. Is the size of it, and other than the 3,200 club level, the rest of it is all player stuff. It's new training rooms, new hitting, pitching facilities. They're putting a pro locker room in there for former players to come back and have their own space for the off season. And then,
I always thought that was one of the cool things Vanderbilt did.
Yeah, that's really
smart.
Neat.
Yeah,
and then they have there'll be a glass kind of area where you can see the players from clubhouse to dugouts and different things from the club levels. I do recommend, I've seen this, the new box seats that are built down with the club level, the sight lines are much improved, where if you're all the way kind of in the front, you almost can look back into the dugouts. It's almost kind of studded out in front of the rest of the structure a little bit around the grandstand. So somebody asked me last night, and I'm kind of curious, I wonder if Mike's going to move his position, because if he stands where he normally stands, he's going to have a fan about 2.5 feet to his right, right
yes,
there around the wall.
He is going to move positions.
Don't think he's going to hang out right there?
No.
The wrong vocal guy right there.
Allow me just to answer that question. Yes, Mike is changing positions.
He will be down
at the – day one, but
Day two.
It won't take long.
About the fourth inning, he's going to be like, hey. This doesn't work. Yeah, we're going to have to do something else here. So, but really cool stuff. Again, mostly player amenity purposes for this one as Ole Miss is trying to catch up. I mean, they had done the fan grandstand structure around 2009, and they were falling behind where some of the other programs were from a player amenity standpoint. So, I've
said this about all stadiums, everything in this league.
It never stops.
You catch up, you get ahead, and then you fall behind. And then you catch up, you get ahead, and then you fall behind. There is no there's never a day of stagnant neutrality.
And now look, I have many opinions here because part of me goes, this is really dumb. I'll be honest. I mean, as a college baseball guy,
financially, it's absolutely stupid. From a fan standpoint and a competing in the league and wanting to win.
Well, no, I get that. Yeah, I'm not talking about Ole Miss. I'm talking about the entire league.
Oh, I'm talking about the whole sport.
Yeah, right.
Listen, from a purely pragmatic financial standpoint, you want to run a football program and a men's basketball program and shut everything else down.
Yeah. But what I will say this. What it does is over time – everybody talks about, oh, well, baseball's always in the red. They're never making money. It's always this, which is true. But by offering premium seating and doing the things they do, they're less in it than they would be otherwise. That's the catch in this is when everybody goes, well, this is stupid because. No, that's not what I mean. I mean, I'm talking about, I mean, no offense, Mike and Dan and Jim and all the people. You've got $10, $12 million coaches now in a sport that almost every program in the country is in the red. It's just financially, it's a crazy situation where college baseball's unique in that right, but Ole Miss definitely keeping up. A&M, LSU had done a lot of player amenity stuff. Vanderbilt doesn't have space for a ton of stadium enhancements, but they've done a good job with some of those things they can with what their limitations are. So, really impressive facility. You'll see it here in a month or so as Ole Miss opens up against Winthrop. And
does this ratchet up the pressure on Mike Bianco?
No. I don't think this
it
one
shouldn't.
Does. No. Now, the other one does, because the other expansion in 09 did, because that was a huge investment for attendance, and you got to fill it up. This is something that needed to be done. Like I said, you know, even Vanderbilt, as small as their stadium is, you just needed more player amenities. This is training stuff. This is lounge areas. It's a 9,000-square-foot baseball-only weight room. I mean, it's very cool. Now, look. It's recruiting advantages, so that plays into it. But, no, it's not going to be
– Does it come with more scholarships?
It does not come with more scholarships. Okay. It is not. It's not going to be, though, the optics of, oh, my God, look at the investment and, you know, whatever. Right. Like, a lot of people are going to walk in and go, $20 million. Nothing changed. Well, it's
the 15-year-old boy that comes up for the unofficial visit is going to be impressed.
Yeah. He's going to have a good day. So, yeah. It's cool. Like I said, I talked to Ross yesterday. Story up at rebelgrove.com as he says, they're pretty close. Early April is the completion date for the entire project, but they'll have most of it in by February the 16th. Also yesterday, Ryan Rollison named first-team All-American preseason by Perfect Game. Enjoy him while you can in 2018. He will not be around in 2019.
You don't think he'll come back for his senior year?
For his junior year. He's only a sophomore. His age made him draft eligible after his sophomore year.
You don't think he...
I think there's a hunch he might sign a professional baseball contract.
I don't know. You don't think he enjoys the college experience enough
to stick
around?
I think he probably
around?
Does enjoy the college experience. Yeah. He also is going to enjoy that $2.7 million that they throw his way here in a few months. Ryan, on that list, the last couple mock drafts I've seen with him have him going number 11 to the Orioles or number 12 to the Blue Jays in the... the last two mocks there were three starting pitchers from the SEC on this list. Casey Mize at Auburn, Rollison from Ole Miss, and then Brady Singer at Florida. Ole Miss does not play Florida, so they avoid Singer. And then with Auburn, Mize has had a lot of health issues. Frankly, I'll be a little shocked if he stays the entire year healthy. Just, I mean, I hope for his sake, but sure. I don't really anticipate it. So Rollison potentially going into the season is the number one pitcher in the league, and that'll help Ole Miss on Friday nights for sure. So that's a little bit of an update there.
Friday night's a big night in SEC. Always has been.
It's a momentum night.
It is.
You know, John Cohen did a lot with pitching backwards, but you do lose a lot of momentum giving away a Friday game. That puts a lot of stress and pressure on the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I get the strategy Cohen implements and
Well, he was on his only choice because he was going to get his head beat in anyway, so you might as well save a pitcher.
Had he had a
he didn't have an ace.
Had he had a stud, stud would have gone on Friday night.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, we all would have looked at Mike a little cross-eyed in 09 and he goes, well, we're going to throw Drew on Sunday this season. We're going to close the weekend on a good mark with Pomerantz. But again, season starts soon. 4-on-1s begin January 15th. Full practice a couple weeks after that, and then obviously the season February 16th. Got big birthday plans, Mr. McCready?
Flying to Chicago tonight.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's right.
Taking
Cubs convention.
Taking Carson to the Cubs convention. This is his Christmas present.
What is it?
Just about every active player. A lot of former players, Carlos Zambrano, Derek Lee, Ferguson Jenkins.
Adrian Gonzalez?
No.
Not invited back?
You're talking about the former shortstop.
Yeah.
Alex Gonzalez.
Alex Gonzalez,
Adrian
sorry.
Played
yeah,
for
yeah.
the Dodgers.
Yeah, Alex Gonzalez, sorry.
I didn't see his name.
Okay. Shocked.
Juan Pierre's back. There's a handful of guys.
Juan Pierre.
Okay. I used to have Juan Pierre on my radio show in Mobile all the time because he played baseball at South.
Jock Jones coming back?
No, unfortunately. That would be cool because I'd go get that jersey autographed.
Okay.
But Zambrano, Derek Lee, and then, and they have a bunch of kid-friendly stuff. Like, they have a press conference kind of thing where kids get to ask all the questions. It's only
really?
For kids. Yeah, so he'll have fun with some stuff like that. He Eddie Butler, who threw him a ball in Baltimore, is going to be there, so he's taking the ball so Eddie can sign it, hopefully.
Speaking of baseball, just popped. I'm frankly a little shocked here, I'll be honest. With the offense they had last year, I didn't expect this. Perfect game, ranking Ole Miss number 11 in the preseason poll to begin the season.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to read that twice, I'll be honest.
I'll be honest, you know more about it than I do. I have covered a lot of sports. I expect that most of those freshmen who struggled last year that are sophomores now are going to benefit greatly from that adversity.
Yeah, I mean, they're good baseball players, so you build from it mentally. I mean, I thought from a poll standpoint, they have a rough season, and it's basically the same roster. So
it's a talented roster.
It is, and they're going to pitch the crap out of it.
And they're young guys last year who cared a lot. And sometimes young guys who care a lot in baseball, they're really – sometimes the hot baseball players don't just – and when I say hot, I don't mean physically. I mean they're hitting the ball and stuff well. They're pretty carefree. Kind of don't give a damn. You have to have a certain don't give a damn to be a great baseball player. You know what I mean? You have a bad at-bat, it's okay, it's over. Go to the next one. I thought last year guys dwelled on some of what happened. You could see them pressing. Fresh start. It'll be a different deal. I imagine this will be a pretty good team. You know, far more about it than I do. I'll never pretend to be the expert. I just think psychologically they will benefit from what happened a year ago.
It's going to be a very tough schedule, too. They get a lot of opportunities early, kind of see where they are. They get Tulane at home, which is a good team. They go to Long Beach for three, which is going to be a different environment, a park that you've got to play small ball in. That wind comes off the water. It's a huge park. Long Beach is going to bunt and run and do all that West Coast stuff, so you got to be more disciplined, be more into fundamentals. And then in an SEC season where Arkansas is going to be really good, A&M is going to be really good, LSU probably down this year a little bit. You play Vanderbilt. And then get lucky with a couple misses too. They don't have to play Kentucky. I think that's a plus, and they don't play the Florida Gators, the defending national champions. So plenty of baseball coming up soon, but that's just a couple things there as I saw it. So you're going to Chicago. What's Carson's restaurant choice now? What's he want
to
do?
He likes to go to Eataly.
He still likes that?
Yeah, he likes it a lot. I like Eataly, too. It probably would not be my choice on a Thursday night if I were making the choice, but I'll let him make the choice if that's what he decides to do.
He's probably going to get the choice.
Yeah.
Just say.
He likes to go down afterwards and get the gelato.
What's the flavor?
He likes a lot of flavors. I won't have it this time. I'm committed, but I like the hazelnut.
State's at 25 in the poll, by the way. Hazelnut's an underrated one.
It's a good one. It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah. Hazelnut's underrated and pistachio is underrated.
Pistachio's phenomenal.
I love pistachio.
Yes, sir.
I'm typically a chocolate guy, but the pistachio is something that
I'm with you.
That's one I'm pretty high on. So.
My problem with stuff like that is I have it once, and it's kind of like going down the slide. It's hard to stop.
Yeah, you just avoid it completely because your willpower is not avoiding it. It's having one bite and stopping. You're the guy that can't eat the one potato chip.
Right. I end up saying, I'm just going to have one of these chips because I just want to try a chip. And a bag later, I'm mad at myself. So I'm better off just not having the damn chip.
I've got the poll up, so just for the sake of conversation here, Florida number one in the nation preseason, defending champions. Yeah, they're pretty good. Ole Miss seems to play them every year in some way. TCU number three. Arkansas number six. That's my pick to win the league. I think they are really, really, really good. Kentucky at number eight. Kentucky, a great model for what Tennessee and Missouri and those programs should do. They've really kind of been able to put some seasons together in Lexington with a lot of the same issues that some of the colder weather teams deal with, even though they're putting a lot of money in their stadium right now, something Missouri and Tennessee are not willing to do. Ole Miss at 11, LSU at 12. I think that's too high. A&M at 15, that might be too low.
I saw where LSU got a lot of their uniforms in yesterday.
How were they?
Their baseball uniforms are just superb.
They were good?
They were really, really good.
The no-button look again? You know, they kind of last year they covered up their buttons.
Yeah, it appeared that they had the no-button thing going. Okay.
Then stayed at 25. I did not see Long Beach unless I am looking over them, and I know I don't. Also considered or receiving votes or whatever was Auburn, Southern Miss, and Vanderbilt not ranked in the top 25.
Wow.
I'd love to get some stock on that and say they're going to finish in the top 25 at the end of the year. I'd love to buy a little bit of it. I'd sell some LSU at 12 or whatever they are, but I'd buy a lot of Vanderbilt at 28, I think, if I got to pick that. I have a hunch Corbin has recruited, okay? So there's probably some dude you don't know yet that throws 98 miles an hour that's going to pitch on Saturdays, I guess.
I will venture to guess they'll have talent.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're going to go to Jay Tate in a second on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Before we do that, I'll tell you the podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. A subscriber on the board yesterday asked about the sildenafil. I gave him the form you can fill out there at Tyson Drugs where they fix it for you. They get it ready and even deliver it to you if you're not local. 662-252-2321 or TysonDrugs.com for the sildenafil or any other pharmacy needs.
The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team, they have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders, one very easy online application, rates as low as 4.9%, terms extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580. They'll get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance, but did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason, go to Google, enter Romero Miller State Farm in the little search engine thing, and then read the reviews. And then when you have needs in Tennessee or Mississippi for your insurance, you should switch to Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212.
Now, Jay Tate on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Jay, welcome into the podcast. Thanks for the help last night. Really appreciate it. You are you've been covering Auburn for about six decades now, and the last time Auburn went to the NCAA tournament, it was a week after Caroline was born. Caroline turns 15 on March the 13th. I think you're headed back to the tournament. It's been a while. If you need, you probably need to call up some of your friends in Kentucky or something, get like a refresher course on how to cover the NCAA tournament because you've not done it in a while.
All right, that's mean, first of all. That's just mean. Don't rub it in my face about it. Because, look, man, I went to school in Kentucky. I went to three straight Final Fours, 96, 97, 98. I was like, oh, life will be like this all the time. Womp, womp.
I know.
Oh, and
our,
it has.
And yeah, our first 6 years on the – you and I were on the Auburn beat together for 6 years. They went to the tournament three times.
Yeah, and I can remember I was sitting near you when they advanced to the second – whatever, the next place. We went to Albany.
Yes.
And they beat Wake Forest in gosh, like I said, it was Tampa, right?
It was Tampa, yeah.
And the look of dread on our face is like, oh, God, we've got to go to Albany.
Remember, we were talking to Jack McCollum, who was with USA Today at the time, and he was like, Albany's not that bad. And we're like, dude.
Oh, come on, man.
I don't need to go to – I didn't need to go to anywhere right then, but I sure didn't want to go to Albany. I needed to get home. That was – we've told that story way too many times on this podcast, but that was that deal where – she had just been born. I drove to Tampa because I thought they'd lose to St. Joe's. And I was going to write real quick, get in the car, and get home. And they beat St. Joe's in what was a really damn good game. You remember what was going on during that day, though, during that game? Do you remember?
Not right off, no.
That was the day that the, I guess, the Gulf War had begun. And so that morning – well, we were back in the media room at the hockey arena there at Tampa. All the TVs were on the bombing of Kuwait.
Okay.
Isn't that right? Was it Kuwait?
What year?
2003.
Yeah, I was thinking that was 91.
Yeah, that's no, that, you're thinking about Desert Storm.
Desert Storm.
Early, that was early 90s, Neil.
Then which one? Which was it, the Gulf War? Which one was 2003?
It would have been the Afghanistan stuff, right?
Hell, I don't know.
Yeah, because
one of there were bombs.
Weren't you a history major or something?
Well, yeah, but this was past college, man.
Yeah, Desert Storm was early 90s.
I stand corrected. It was the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
2003.
Yeah.
Okay.
Started on March the 20th, went to May the 1st, 2003. Started the Iraq War.
May the 1st, that was when it was over. Yeah. It ended on May 1st.
Well, that particular invasion, I guess they finished the
campaign.
The invasion portion of the war.
Man, we were bumming about having to go to Albany. Yeah, because we knew this team wasn't going anywhere. I mean, they just weren't good enough.
But well, we didn't think they were, but damn, that team almost ended up Final Four.
They lost by 1 point to Syracuse, who won the whole damn tournament.
Carmelo Anthony beat Marquise Daniels by a point that night in Albany.
They had McNamara, too.
Syracuse, yeah.
Did I see this right, Jake? Not only the first time in the tournament, this is the first season they've been ranked in like that long, too? Is that right?
I think it's been since 05. They were ranked briefly in 05, I think.
Gotcha.
So that's still a long time.
And it's a team that's doing all this without the other dudes. I mean, what would this team have been?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't think the answer is as easy as you might think. You think, oh, okay, well, Austin Wiley, 6'11", awesome player, no doubt. But the chemistry on this team is perfect right now, and everybody's got their role, and they're pretty good at it. At this point, I do think they're going to get Austin Wiley back. That's just my opinion. I think the other kid, D'Angelo Purifoy, is gone. But they may get Austin back, and I wonder how that would affect this ball club because you're adding a guy into a system that's working perfectly. And even though he's a really good player, I just wonder if it would disrupt things. Now, look, he's practicing with them. He gets like what you would call first team reps and practice all the time. I mean, he's with the team all the time. It's as if he's a regular guy, you know, with the team. So it wouldn't be like weird or anything, but I just wonder how rotations would be affected, et cetera, because they're really good right now. I mean, they're not Duke or maybe they are Kentucky good.
They're better than Kentucky.
They probably are right now, but
I watched Kentucky and A&M last night. Kentucky's good, but they're not the, this is not the dominant Calipari teams.
That's right. I agree, and I don't know why. I mean, I think their guard play is just not quite there, but, you know, Auburn's got really good guard play, and I liked Ole Miss's guard play last night. They just have kind of like those awkward white dudes playing forward, and they're just kind of spazzy. I don't know. Ole Miss seems unbalanced to me, just personnel-wise. Just my opinion. You know, I made a comment to some of the people at the game last night that if I had a son – I would like for him to play for Andy Kennedy because I like Andy Kennedy a lot. I think he's a good coach. I like the way he coaches. He's fiery without being a jerk. He's tough on people, but he's not stupid. I think he's fantastic, and I just got a bunch of blank stares. Like, are you serious?
Yeah, it's people that if you don't know him and you only just watch him coach a little, the thing I respect about Kennedy as a coach, and I agree with you about your kid playing for him, is there's going to be a certain look, he's from the Huggins tree, and there's a certain Huggins aspect to him. He's tough on players. He holds them accountable, but he's tough on himself. I've covered him 10 years. I've yet to hear him make an excuse. Like, he was asked last night in the press conference about DeAndre Burnett not playing, and he said, yeah, it hurt, but I mean, that's not why we lost.
Which is true.
I mean, they would have lost with DeAndre Burnett. Did it hurt them? Yes. Did it, you know, did the fact that, you know, they got to Auburn and they wake up the day of the game and he doesn't feel well and he ends up not being able to play, does that affect your preparation? Well, of course. But is it the Absolutely. Reason they lost the game? No. The reason they lost the game is because this team cannot score. They can't shoot the basketball. It's odd because they have players individually who in the past, whether it be at Ole Miss or Memphis or wherever, have made shots and they can't make shots.
Yeah, not a good shooting team. They've got to go downhill and drive to the bucket. And they did a lot of that in the first half, but then they weren't able to do much of that in the second half, and it hurt them.
Andy's always been complimentary, even in years past when Auburn wasn't a particularly good basketball team. He's always been complimentary of that arena and the atmosphere. It certainly sounded on TV last night like they've kind of got it going there. They've always drawn crowds, but people get excited about winners, and that team's winning. What is the atmosphere like?
It's good. I mean, like last night, it wasn't full. I mean, it was, you know, there were a lot of people there, but it wasn't like jam packed. I mean, there were seats available. It looked like it to me from the floor. I mean, but enthusiasm's good. I mean, you know, from back in the 99 season here at Auburn, when you've got someone that wins a lot, you're going to get support. And I think that new arena they have makes it seem like it's fuller than it really is. You know what I mean? It's loud, even though it's not real big.
Yeah, they did a good job with it, kind of like the one at Ole Miss. They did a really good job with it. They made it the right size.
I love Ole Miss's arena. I got a chance to go on their last football game because they have it open during the football games or before it, whatever. It was awesome.
Yeah,
love it over there.
They did a really good job with it. They really did.
I keep telling my daughter, like, if you're not going to go to Auburn just because we're so close to Auburn, you need to take a good look at Ole Miss because, man, it's an awesome school. Love Ole Miss. Good stuff over there. And if I had a son, it'd be Andy Kennedy, Lon Kruger, or Tubby Smith. That'd be, if he didn't really want to win, he'd go with Tubby. But Tubby's a really good dude, too.
He is a good guy.
So those would be my three.
Yeah, Kruger's good. I like Kruger a lot.
He's probably nicer than Andy, but, man, I know my kid. I have a daughter, but she would need to be pushed, and she would need to be with somebody like Andy Kennedy would stay on your butt, you know?
You need you know your hypothetical son well enough to know that he needs to be pushed.
He would need to be pushed, which means he'd need to be with Kennedy probably. But the thing is, I you know, when I'm shooting, I shoot from the floor, so I take pictures and stuff. And so I'm standing, you know, 10 feet from Andy, and I can hear basically everything he's saying except when he's talking just to his assistants. But he's talking to kids, and he's hard on him, but he's not. Everything is instructional. And I don't think he goes over the top. Lots of coaches do go over the top and get really nasty, but he doesn't.
He coaches hard. You get an honest day's work out of him. I love like the tournament settings and stuff where you get either put close enough or in proximity where you can hear him. It's really funny. The funniest one, they had a game in South Haven. Isn't that where that arena is? South Haven?
Yeah.
And they were playing like I don't know, Murray State or somebody, and they were winning pretty big, and I was positioned where I was like two seats over from the Ole Miss bench, so I could hear everything, and when he's up walking around and stuff, I could hear everything, and two or three times he'd turn and say something to me, and I just laughed like a kid. I just laughed. I thought it was so funny. I mean, just listening to some of the things he said to players, and the great story here is they used to have a player here. He transferred from Florida, David Huertas. And Huertas, obviously,
he was Puerto Rican, I believe.
His primary language was Spanish. And apparently sometimes Huertas would talk back to Andy in Spanish. And I think as long as it was in Spanish, Andy really didn't care because he wasn't completely sure what he said. Which was great.
I remember that dude. He was good.
He was a good shooter.
Yeah, he could shoot a little bit. That was kind of it. How's the last week been around the Auburn football program? Alabama wins its 7,000th national title. Auburn loses to the other national champions.
6,000.
It's been an interesting week around there.
Yeah, it's been kind of tough. You know, you watch that game, and there's really no winner from an Auburn perspective, the one in Atlanta. At least the roof was leaking and people were getting wet. That was good. And I don't know. I mean, if you're asking my opinion as someone who's been covering Auburn for more than 20 years now, it's just unbelievable. Georgia fans are the worst. We can talk all day about Alabama fans, and they've got their negatives, but Georgia fans are insufferable. I don't think you guys have to hear them very much because you're a little bit further over in Mississippi.
Yeah,
but
no.
They are horrible. I mean, you'd think they'd won 5 or 6 national titles since Herschel, the way they talk. So it was nice to hear them kind of shut up.
Yeah, what was your message board split on? I mean, if they had to pick one, who they wanted to win?
I was surprised by how much tied there was. I mean, I was thinking it'd be like 0% tied, and it was probably more like 30% tied because they hate, a lot of Auburn people are in Georgia or around Georgia, and they don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So they knew what I know. But I had to make a rule. I was like, look, man, if you're going to start threads with this RTR business or this Go Dogs crap, I mean, I'm going to ban you immediately. No, there's no warning. If you start a thread RTR on this board, you're gone. And people pretty much accepted that. We didn't have a lot of trouble.
You didn't have to drop a hammer?
Well, one guy deserved it, but he's a guy who draws MS Paint stuff for us as a joke. We call them masterpieces, and I let him go. He takes these funny moments that happen, and then he draws like a really rough like MS Paint picture of them. We call them masterpieces, and like one of them was when Rhett Lashley left, and it was a picture of like Gus and Rhett holding each other crying, and they were in Gus's office with an empty trophy case because they never win anything, and it was just hilarious, man.
How's Rhett going to do with Sonny over there?
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe he's moving up because UConn was horrible last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Rhett a lot, and I think he's good. He just he had time to leave and go somewhere good, I mean, for the last 2 years, and he just never got moving. And so finally he got to a point at Auburn where he's like, got to go right now, and it was just UConn. So
you wrote about this, but I couldn't read the column because I don't have premium access to your site.
Is that true?
It's true, I don't.
You're supposed to have universal access on the entire network.
Well, I don't.
Okay.
So I'm curious what the column said because I wanted to read it.
Yeah.
Gus had a really interesting year, right? Because he started the season on the hot seat, and if you don't beat Georgia and or Alabama, you're going to get fired. And then lo and behold, he beats Georgia, beats Alabama, really blows them out. Has the Arkansas job as leverage, gets a massive contract with a real big buyout, gets all the stability that he wants. Then he proceeds to lose the SEC championship game and then lose the bowl game. And it's kind of like, what do you get with Gus? What do you get? Do you get the Gus that won in November, or do you get the Gus that couldn't handle the postseason? And I was curious kind of what the column said. And I was also kind of curious, what was the fan reaction to that roller coaster?
Okay, I don't remember the column. First of all, they lost the bowl game to the national champion UCF Knights. Okay?
They did.
So, I mean, yeah, they're national champions. And then Georgia played for the national championship. So, I mean, it's not the worst caliber of opponent.
No, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying.
I think people are nervous. I think they were nervous anyway. And then they beat Georgia and Alabama. And I think a lot of people were like, okay, they've turned a corner. But then a lot of people were still like, we know Gus. Then he goes out to Atlanta and lays an egg, and then he lost to Central Florida. And I think a lot of people are like, oh God, we're on a $50 million deal with this dude now. And it's going to be the same old Gus where he beats, Arkansas, Mississippi State or whatever. And then he drops the deuce when it's time to really come out firing. But because it was a perfect storm for him from when you're arguing for a new contract because there's no AD or Jay Jacobs is still here, but he's not doing anything. Dude, he wasn't even in the meetings for this contract extension. He wasn't even there.
So who made the call?
The president of the university, Stephen Leith, who is basically a Trump. He's basically Donald Trump in the college athletics world or college president's world. He's like this, headstrong, I don't need any help kind of guy. And he personally negotiated it. But he was in such a spot. I mean, he just got hired in June. At the time, as you mentioned, they had just beat Georgia and Alabama back-to-back. And it was like, we got to do something here. I can't afford to have, Gus leave. And so I think they just gave him everything he wanted. And I don't know as though Gus was really going to leave. And if he had, so what? I mean, he's a good coach, but they could have had Chad Morris. I think a lot of Chad Morris. I was talking to some Arkansas guys the other day. They're like, man, I don't know. I'm like, I love Chad Morris.
Really?
Yeah.
See, Chad Morris's name came up here a lot, but Chad Morris is connected to Sean Tuohy, the booster, and his son was on the SMU support staff and is now on the Arkansas support staff. And there was Chad Morris's hire would not have gone well here at all. It would have been a very negative thing.
These are things I don't know. I just know him as a dude I met at the Auburn complex like 4 years ago. Had no idea who he was, but he looked like a coach. So I started talking to him. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm Chad Morris. I'm a coach." And I was like, "Oh my God." So we just started talking and I really like him. He's a really good dude. Every time I come across him, I'm like, that guy's a winner. And then he starts winning. I mean, SMU wasn't awesome this year, but they're pretty good. And I don't know. I think he's going to be good at Arkansas. I think that's a good fit for him. He'll be able to go to Texas and get some kids, and he'll just be a menace.
So
no, not national champion, but he'll be a menace.
You're there in the state. There were some rumors that – they're not rumors. That's not even the right word. There are people that are so desperate for this Alabama thing to end that they watched the post game and – Saban looked oddly happy.
He did. I agree.
And hugged people more than I've ever seen him hug anybody. And it fed, I guess, that narrative of, hey, he's going to walk out on top. You put any stock at all into Nick Saban leaving Alabama?
Sure I do. Why not?
Really?
I don't have any particular insight into that. But you're right. It did not seem like a regular Nick Saban moment there. And, you know, at this point, he's even with Bear Bryant as far as titles over there, even when you count him legitimately. And, I mean, maybe that's a good way to go. And this was one hell of a coaching job. I mean, this season, this was not a great Alabama team. I mean, it was good enough to win a national title, obviously. But compared to the other teams they've had, it was just merely good.
I agree.
And he got them all the way through. They did a good job. They got it home with one headlight is what I like to say.
I watched them play that game in Starkville in November, and I thought, this team's not good. That was the day I said, Auburn's going to beat them.
And they had trouble with A&M, too.
Yeah, so they did. A&M got physical with them.
Very physical. Like the only time all year. Speaking of A&M, did you follow the story about the Rivals reporter from A&M?
Yeah, we talked. We hadn't talked about it on the podcast, but we obviously were following it when it happened because – you know, crazy. I mean, like you, and we know Courtney.
Sure we do.
You're thinking, oh, my God. I mean, I went to bed that night thinking, frankly, the worst.
Me too. I was praying it up, dude, because I know Courtney, and she's not, man, I tell you, I made a mistake of reading a Reddit thread about her, about that whole situation. That was a bad idea, because I know Courtney, and I like Courtney a lot, and it was just, oh, my God.
The internet, I know this isn't going to be shocking to you. The internet is a cold, dark place.
I know it can be. You're right.
It really can. And, it can be a great place because, like, the social media thing that happened that night was the reason that she got found, I guess. I don't
see. Yeah, there was a poster at that site that just ran across her to Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
Sees her through the window.
She's not an attention seeker. I feel like I really know this girl. I mean, I've hung out with her a bunch of times. She's not an attention seeker.
No, she's a really nice person.
She's just a nice person. And I learned a big lesson from Courtney, honestly, because, and seriously, I told this story to my daughter long before this happened. Courtney, as you guys know, or maybe don't know, she looks like a model, right? I mean, she's just gorgeous. She has some tall, thin,
blonde, thin, yeah.
She's an actual model. I mean, she does that, and you know, part-time. And so when I met her initially, I was like, she's a dummy. Because, look, I look like Shrek, okay? I've been living my whole life as a cross-eyed, fat loser, you know? And people like Courtney, I don't really deal with very much. So I just kind of typecast her as a dummy. And I treated her like a dummy. Like, it was just so stupid. And so, anyway, we were at the Rivals camp one time in Baltimore, and I tried to get a shirt from my daughter. And a Rivals staffer by the name of Sarah, I won't go any deeper than that, like, got on my case and said, no, you cannot have a shirt for your daughter. Oh, my God. And created this huge scene. Well, Courtney overheard this, and she comes up to me. She goes, I'll get you a shirt. I'll get you three. Don't you worry about it. And so the next day, she showed up and was like, here's your shirts. Screw that girl.
That's awesome.
So starting there, I started talking to Courtney, and she ends up being one of my favorite people on earth. Seriously.
I think that Sarah chick's gone now.
Thankfully, she was doing something else.
Yeah, I think
she's a mess, man.
I think she works for another organization now, if I have that right.
Why?
In the same field?
No, I accidentally realized I followed her on Twitter the night that Courtney disappeared because she had retweeted something. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember you. And then I looked at her profile.
Ah.
Anyway. Sorry.
Anyway, Courtney ends up being, well, my second favorite Courtney, because I'm married to one, but really, truly one of my favorite people ever, because she has this hilarious sense of humor. She's like super dry with her delivery, and you never know if she's just, I don't know.
I had to stop reading the thread on our board because I was getting a little pissed off.
Me too, on our board. Because people are saying she deserves to apologize to people now.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
She don't owe me an apology. I'm just glad she's okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
We're alive. And I mean, okay.
These resources that were used to find her, I'm like, it was a poster. It was a message board poster found her in a Chick-fil-A. Calm down.
I was glad to find out she was alive. When we were doing the podcast and we found out she was alive, and we both were kind of looking at each other like, wow. I was braced. I was totally braced for the worst.
Yeah. So that's a great story. And I know this is going to be tough for her to get back going again, you know, professionally, because people are always going to be like, oh, that's the girl who like faked her own disappearance, which did not happen.
What happened? Do we know? She had a reaction medically?
Yeah. I mean, to medication is the story, but man, I'm telling you, weird stuff happens sometimes, yo, particularly when you're dealing with Ambien. I bet you have listeners that take Ambien, and if you mix that with this, that, or the other thing, I mean, telling you, some weird stuff happens. Huh. And my mom and my sister, rest in peace, used to do that, and they didn't mean to. And I mean, my sister would do some really weird stuff, dude. I don't want to get into it, but I'm telling you, Ambien, and I don't use it, so I don't know firsthand, but people do some weird stuff when they get Ambien'd up. And I think that's something like that happened. Now, it's really embarrassing for her, I'm sure. I mean, people like us are still going to love her just because, you know, she's in our network and we know her, but
I mean, literally, all I would say to her is, I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah. So.
How you doing? Period. I mean, I got mad at the people that she owes an apology. You know what I mean? Who does she owe an apology to?
That's crazy.
It's stupid. I don't know. I always, Chase knows this. I always hate, the person I hate the most in the world is the I would never person. Hate that person. Well, I would never do that. I would never. You don't know. Stop. Never and always are words that are just too big. They're too big to be used.
Okay. Then I won't use them on the show, but I'll say it privately.
Okay.
Last thing here, is there going to be any story in Auburn? What's the spring, early summer storyline? Is it the AD thing? What's going on?
Are we at the end of the show already? Good golly.
Well, I mean, all right. You can keep talking if you want. You've been on 25 minutes. If you'd like.
Yes.
To go.
Oh, is that true? Yeah. The athletic director search is nearing its end. I don't know exactly who it's going to be. They've kept this really close to the vest. In fact, it's basically the president and one or two trustees kind of putting this thing together.
He sounds pleasant, by the way.
He's an interesting cat. He doesn't like media very much, so I don't interact with him a whole lot. Although he likes student media. I don't know.
Imagine kind of that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're easy to kind of control, I guess. But anyway, I haven't heard much about it. I think they're going to get some dude who's like, or girl, from just God knows where. I mean, who's doing a great job at Maine or somewhere like that, you know? Did a hell of a job in New Mexico State, and we're going to bring him in. It's going to be somebody from outside the family, so to speak. So
Pearl's going to be okay with this FBI thing? That's what it sounds like, right?
That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, there was a time, Neil, maybe 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago when it was day to day. I thought they were going to fire him. They thought they were going to get fired because he wasn't talking to the president. The president wanted like a wide ranging interview. And then Pearl didn't want to do that because he felt like that could perjure himself were he ever called to testify to the FBI. And he thought he would get kind of stuck in a Josh Pastner situation.
Yeah. His attorneys told him, just don't.
Do not do it. That's right. And it just happened to be going on when Josh Pastner thing was going on. And he was just nervous and didn't want to do that. And so the president was like, well, if you don't do it, we're going to take action. And Pearl's like, don't do this to me. Don't put me in this situation. And so they're at this nasty little impasse, little stare down. And ultimately they kind of worked it out where Pearl submitted to like a half interview. And then the president agreed to kind of back off. And
yeah, cooler heads prevailed.
But it was not until the last minute that they did prevail. And you know, I don't think the FBI thing's over. They still got two kids held out. I mean, these revelations came about, 3 months ago, and they're still working through it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Pearl will end up being all right, but I don't know that. Job this year, though.
You know the FBI is going to drop some college basketball bomb in March. I mean, you can almost feel it coming.
Yeah. They do like their drama, don't they?
They love drama.
Is I mentioned this earlier on the show, just kind of curious. Casey Mize, healthy, going to stay healthy? Any idea there?
Relatively healthy, yeah. Okay. I think he'll go into the season 100%. I mean, that's the story I've been given, and okay. I don't have any reason to believe that's not the case. He's good.
He is?
I would say at this point when he's actually at Auburn, he's the best pitcher I've seen. And that includes Tim Hudson, who was a good pitcher when he was here. I just feel like Tim Hudson ended up having a better pro career than I would have thought.
Yeah, those guys happen.
I mean, those guys happen. He was really good. I mean, he was an All-America, but he was kind of a hitter too, you know, at that time. And then when he got up with the Athletics and started rolling back in the early days, I was like, wow, I didn't know he had it in him. And then he ends up having probably, a 15-year career.
Yeah.
I mean, no, close to the Hall of Fame. He probably won't make the Hall of Fame, but he'll be close-ish, and that's crazy.
Yeah, Mize is incredible if he's healthy. I mean, I was looking up some draft stuff yesterday on a kid at Ole Miss. It's a first-round pick this summer, and I think Mize was slated to go number 6 overall to the Mets when I looked at it.
Yeah, he's good, man. He's a really good player. But again, like you mentioned, his arm's kind of a little bit off. Or it seemed that way last year. Now, that's been a long time since I've actually seen him throw.
If I were a baseball executive at a major league level, it would be I would be a mess because I would talk myself out of every pitcher on the planet. I would want to draft nothing but hitters. Pitchers just terrify you, and then you have to have them. Obviously,
that ain't gonna work.
Won't work. You got to take chances on them. I would be a nervous wreck.
But they could tell me all day long the pitch counts don't matter, and I guarantee you it does. You'll never talk me out of it, and it's because of me talking to Jake Peavy back in the day. Remember when he was coming up through the Padres organization, They would pull him out in the middle of a count when he, if it was a 2-1 count, and he'd hit his 60 pitches. They were like, dude,
I watched him do it. Yeah.
And they were very careful with him. And
they had him
more or less fine.
It was him and Dennis Tankersley and a couple other guys that they thought were the future of their rotation. Just to show you the point, everybody wanted them. People were trying to trade for them. They held on to them. They had all those guys, and they had them in Mobile. And you're right. They would have them on, 55-pitch count, 60-pitch count, and it would be a 2-1 count, one on, one out in the fourth, and they're coming to get him.
Yep.
And you'd be
that's how I would have done it.
That was the number. That manager had one job. Get him out.
Can the college kids get up to 120 pitches? 19 years old. And Jake Peavy at 19 is getting pulled out at 50. So, big difference.
Yeah, my only knock on the college game really is when they get to the tournament setting, like the postseason, not the SEC, and there's so much pressure on the coaches and stuff, and then the kids are competitive, and a kid throws 119 pitches on Friday, and the coach is throwing him back out there on Sunday in relief, and you're just like, oh, God.
Yes, that's the Lane Mestepe phenomenon.
It just kind of makes me cringe.
I mean, the early one was Ben McDonald, right?
Oh, yeah. No, Burtman rode him into the ground.
Think about how good – he was pretty good anyway until he broke down in the majors. Think about what he would have been like if he'd stayed together.
He had phenomenal stuff.
And Ben Sheets, too.
Ben Sheets at North – he was at Northwestern, wasn't he? State?
I was thinking it was Northeastern, but either way, they were very careful with him, and then he ended up having a good career.
You might be right about Sheets. Sheets and I might both be ULM guys.
Yeah, I think that is right now that I think about it.
I should have a shrine to Ben Sheets somewhere in my house.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But he was a Brewer, so kind of hard.
He was indeed.
Yep.
Good guy, though. Good guy. Did you have him on the show years ago?
Not that I recall.
I actually went on your show with Jake Peavy one time.
Yeah, I had Peavy on the show a bunch.
Yeah, good dude.
Because Peavy and Taylor Zarzer are super tight.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
I just saw Zarzer days ago. He did the Auburn Arkansas basketball game. I can't believe he's gotten to be, what he is. I mean, he's good and I like him, but I know.
Like, I was listening to the I was watching the Music City Bowl and I was like, holy, that's Taylor.
Yeah.
And sure enough, yeah, he had two or three big ESPN gigs. He's kind of – I think it's going to happen.
Our little boy's all grown up.
Man, he works hard. He's really prepared. He's always had great work ethic and stuff. I always thought he's going to go places. But he and Peavy are tight because they're both – Taylor's a big Red Sox fan. has been all of his life. And when Peavy was with the Red Sox and they won the World Series, he had Taylor up there. Taylor got to go down on the field the night they won the World Series in Boston.
Wow.
All that kind of stuff. So it was really cool. Yeah, they're
good for him.
They're buddies.
I don't have any buddies like that. I'm just a message board moderator. I talk about going places in my career, huh? Yes, sir.
Going to the tournament.
I feel you.
You're going to the tournament.
I feel you.
We got a long way to go, Chase.
You're going to the tournament.
Oh, you're going to the tournament.
Man.
You're going to the tournament. That's a tournament team.
Cool.
That's a tournament team.
If you say so.
All right, my man. Good visiting with you.
All right. I want to say hi to all my friends at Rebel Grove. I love you guys. I know you don't love me back, but that's all right. We'll work it out later.
All right, buddy. Be good.
Peace.
As always, thanks to J.G. Tate for joining us here on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline and the Oxford Exxon Podcast. A podcast that is brought to you also by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You get local underwriting and understand your market. Check them out also if you're looking for condo financing in Oxford. And ask Jason about the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys, more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com. or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
Just kind of a wrap here. I thought it was an interesting Twitter conversation when I put up the story about the baseball renovation at Swayze. This morning, Gabe DeArmond from Missouri retweeted it and said that 6 years ago he's talked about how baseball was the sport that Missouri would have the hardest time competing in the SEC, and this is an example why, because they've not done a lot of renovations. They've got a lot of weather issues. But it went into a conversation from there with him. Matthew Stevens used to cover Mississippi State, now covers Auburn.
Yeah.
Big baseball guy as well. And said more so than weather or anything, Missouri – maybe in some ways, like Mississippi has in basketball a little bit, has a baseball culture issue where huge Cardinals fans, some
huge
Royals fans,
yeah, sure.
But they skip that college level. There's not the – he said, you know, Matthew said made the point of in Mississippi, yeah, they might want to go play for the Braves growing up, but they kind of want to go to Ole Miss or State first, and then they do whatever. He said Missouri has none of that dynamic whatsoever in a state that's pretty baseball talented.
Yeah, a lot of baseball players and lots of people who really follow baseball.
Yeah.
But they follow professional baseball.
Mm-hmm. Not really room for that extra team there from a baseball standpoint.
Just kind of doesn't work because Missouri's also a big basketball state. They love basketball.
Chiefs are right there.
And they have the NFL. It's a big college basketball state. And so the baseball season gets squeezed out because the Cardinals and Royals open up. They go to spring in the middle of February, and then they open up first weekend in April or whatever.
There,
there you go. And those are fan bases that are day one locked in.
Yeah.
There's just really no room.
Yeah. So
the calendar's only so long.
Interesting enough, check rebelgrove.com. Plenty of coverage up. Russell's got some recruiting up this morning as well. We are 4 weeks from National Signing Day, 28 days until the 2018 class is put to bed. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Neil from Chicago, me from the Clark Ford studio, and we will talk to you then. Good day.